A very warm welcome to the first podcast of 2024 with the ever charming, handsome and all-round glorious specimen, Brian Welsh, or as we all know him, Welshy. In this episode, we chat starting your own business and some of the ups and downs of landing your dream client, which, side note, for all your PR needs, Brian Welshy on Twitter / X and Brian Welsh PR on LinkedIn. Linked in the show notes, actually. So check that out. We also chat running, lots and lots of running chat. So although specific to running, I do think some of the principles are applicable to other areas of life. So hopefully it isn't too dull, he says rather ambitiously. And actually, whilst we're on a roll with plugs, Helensburgh Runner on Instagram for Welshy's running page, also linked in the show notes below. And then finally, with the Euros coming up later this year, we chat football. Come on! So whether Scottish, English, Luxembourgish, or anything in between, hope you enjoy. Mr. Brian Welsh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
But I'm actually the guest today, as we are sat here at Fir Hill, which needs no explaining, but just in case, for the one or two of people who don't know, it's the home of the mighty Partick Thistle.
Absolutely.
Do you want to do a quick introduction and let the people know what we're doing here?
Well, yeah, thanks very much for having me on the pod, Mr. Birch. It's lovely to see you again. We're here at the Wire Stadium at Fir Hill, of course, to give it its full naming rights.
Should have done my research. Woefully underprepared, as per usual.
No, not at all.
At least I didn't call it Celtic Park.
I'm just trying to get a free car off them. But yeah, as the song goes, Partick, THISTLE, our red and yellow team, and FIRHILL is our stadium of dreams. And this is a stadium in the northwest of Glasgow of the team I've supported since I was a boy. And very fortunately, as I sit here with you today, I also work for them as a sort of part-time press officer, consultant, oblique hospitality host as well. So happy days.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
How does one get into a job like that? Because on paper, working for your childhood club, having your childhood club as a client is like stuff of dreams, right?
Absolutely.
That's incredible. How did you even get into that?
Crikey, where do we start? I guess the answer to the question, how did I work for Partick Thistle, it came about after I'd worked as a public relations public relations executive manager, director at two big agencies in Glasgow, the Big Partnership, and then Frame, obviously, where I met yourself.
Shout out
to Frame, first of many, I'm sure. And at the end of that kind of... Well, the reason I'm working for Thistle is after 18 months at Frame and with sort of more needs at home as well as in the office, I decided it was the time was right for me to go out on my own and just be able to be a bit more flexible around the kids at school at that point. And I was very, very fortunate, firstly, to be supported by Stephen and the guys at Frame to do that. But secondly, just as I went out on my own, Partick Thistle had a need for a press officer and they wanted a part-time solution to it. And the stars aligned, and that was just over 4 years ago. And it's been, I could talk for hours about what's happened since then.
Well,
The clock is ticking, but it's been amazing, and it's a genuine privilege. I'm not lying, when I walk up to the stadium, I still feel like that wee kid getting goosebumps, because it's my team and I've got a chance to do some good on the inside now, so I love it.
You also forgot one reason why you had to leave Frame. You just couldn't win a game of ping pong against me. You're like, fuck it up, gotta go somewhere else here.
Well, funnily you should say that, because I'm now losing games of ping pong at Partick Thistle. The vice captain schooled me a couple of times, so I need to up my game. But yeah, ping pong was a brilliant part of that Frame journey. But it was a great place for me to spend 18 months and do loads of fun work. And then it gave me the platform, obviously, to come here, thanks to Stephen and the team. So it's all good.
And then going off to do your own thing, is much easier said than done, obviously. And it's one thing that I imagine that lots of people aspire to do, but for whatever reason, they can't, or they don't want to, or they don't maybe have the courage. What gave you the confidence to have that to make that leap of faith?
I think I had considered it previously when I was at the big partnership, and the time just never felt right, because it is a risk, and you're giving up a guaranteed salary and putting all the pressure on your own shoulders. I was always confident I could do it. I think from my point of view, my confidence came from the fact over 15 years of working in that environment, I built up so many good contacts and good people, and I knew there was good relationships that could bring about some work. And the other thing that gave me confidence was you. It's very hard to tell yourself you're really good at what you do, but when a lot of people who you trust tell you you're good at what you do, you've got to think, well, wait a minute, they might be onto something here. So there's lots.
Did
of
you
people...
not pick up on the sarcastic tone?
there's a lot of people saying I had the potential to make a success of it, and it was hard at the start because I didn't think I'm going to do this in a year and I'm going to have 10 clients to kick me off and I'm going to be ready. I did it relatively quickly because of other circumstances meant I just wanted to do it quickly. But I started off with, you know, only one or two clients. I didn't have enough money in month one. I just had to work hard at it in the early days. But the confidence came from partly myself, but I'm really drawn on what other people were telling me.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one actually, because so you made the transition to work for yourself and not to reveal your age, but I suppose we're going to reveal your age.
Yeah, absolutely.
You did it at a relatively later period. A lot of people almost, because how old were you when you did it? Was it 40?
I was 40, yeah, 40.
40, yeah, because I think for a lot of people, they think, oh no, by the time, you know, you're 40, you know, you don't, whatever. It's too late to start your own thing. But I think I love that you did that, because to your point, you didn't blindly go into starting your own thing. You almost like built up 15 years of experience and like the evidence to yourself that you did have the ability and the skills and the contacts to make it work. So I think there's a nice, dare I say, like little, that's a nice takeaway. You know, it's like 40 is still unbelievably young, right? It's not, you know,
45 now, mate. It's a football analogy. It's half time now, mate.
Yeah,
I hope for a good second half. I mean, the age bit doesn't. It is only a number. It's a cliche, but it's totally true. Just what's right for you, you can do it at the time that's right for you. And I think probably quite a lot of what we might talk about in the next 45 minutes or so, that's maybe a wee bit unorthodox and not going with the norm, but that's probably half the fun of it,
isn't it? Because you have these expectations when you're like whatever, however young, it's like, oh, I need to be X position by 25, I need to be married, kids by 28 30, whatever it is. You almost have these like age related milestones in your head, and when you go past them, it's very easy to have a bit of a freak out, dare I say, and start comparing yourselves to other people who are obviously only selectively showing the best bits of themselves on social media, which is the usual window through which we get to see, you know, exposure to other people's lives.
Totally. And I think working in an agency structure, and you'll know this as well as anyone, there's things you can do and things you can achieve and titles you can chase, like in terms of job titles, not like the Premier League. But you can pursue things, but there's maybe a set number of them, and that's great. But when you're out on your own, it's like totally unlimited now what I can do, because it's just all down to me, and I can try and pick up any kind of work that I want. But I get high. There's obviously pros and cons, and risks and positives.
Because does that almost at some points feel like slightly overwhelming? Because when you're in a corporate structure, let's say, you can almost like aim for that next job title, that next salary increase. And you can kind of chunk down the bigger goals into these smaller, more achievable ones. But I can imagine that when you're out doing your own thing, it can be, quite overwhelming at times.
Definitely. And over the last 4.5 years, I've been overwhelmed a lot. And, you know, that for a number of reasons. You can feel really isolated. You need to make sure you keep talking to people and connecting to people and getting advice from people you trust and remembering if you're in a bad spot or you're struggling a bit with whether it's your workload or pressures or not managing to get a holiday, which is a recurring theme. Remember like where you are at that moment and how you've got there and all the success behind it. And it's very hard sometimes when you're on your own to remember to do that, but I'm getting a wee bit better at it year on year.
Because I imagine for someone who's incredibly extroverted, you like being very much, you know, the centre of the energy, you bring the vibe, you like to you know, give everyone a good laugh, make sure everyone's having a good time. Starting your own thing, almost by definition, is quite a lonely thing to do. I can imagine, especially for quite a big character, extroverted person, there's particularly a tension there as well. How did you manage some of that loneliness, I guess, in want of a better word, which you don't need to think about when you work for a big corporate company, especially an agency, right, which is typically quite, you know, younger, extroverted, similar type of people, especially in Glasgow, you know, shout out again to Frame, like, when we were there, it was class, right? There's so many absolute legends there. Did you struggle with that transition from being surrounded by people to then kind of just being out on your own, and what did you do to try and mitigate some of that?
I think, I definitely missed the environment I was in immediately, because you just lose that overnight, being around the same people every day, and all the jokes and laughter and companionship that comes with kind of the office culture. I think because of where I was personally at that point, and, you know, I basically woke up the next morning, started on my own, took the kids to school, had a bit of downtime, to be honest, for a while, because I didn't have enough work. I just went out loads of runs, and I actually just used that opportunity to feel a bit better up there in my head. So I think because going out on my own, I actually was solving a few things for me personally quite quickly. It maybe meant I didn't miss that thing quite as much that I'd lost, if that makes sense.
But also,
once the work started to kind of tick in, and I was getting involved in Partick Thistle, and I'm not going to rhyme off every client and give them a minute, but I was lucky that I was, you know, I had 3, 4, 5 clients quite quickly, and they all, you know, I'm welcome to go and work in their offices and be part of their teams. I felt involved with them. A lot of them I knew already, so that kind of helped to replace it. But obviously, the people you're closest to in the place that you leave is what you miss the most, isn't it?
Yeah. Running. You alluded to it there. So you very much use that as kind of a form of, I don't want to say medication, obviously, but maybe even meditation, to kind of get away, mull things over. So obviously running has become hugely popular. I mean, it's always been hugely popular, but I feel like especially since lockdown, which was pretty much the only form of like high intensity exercise you could do, it's certainly seen a massive increase in popularity as well. You've, since I've known you, kind of always been into that longer distance running. So you very much used that as a bit of a way to figure out your thoughts. So you'd go out, long run, no podcast, no music, just you and your thoughts, and just try and mull things over. Is that right or what?
Yeah. 100%. Running's been brilliant for me. When I was younger, I played football. Football was the sport, and that just kind of started to peter out a bit in the early 30s. And then you need to do something about it. I've never really been one for the gym. I took on running probably just as the football tailed off, the running came onto the scene, really enjoyed it. The mental health, positive impact side of it was as important, if not more, than the physical bit. The physical bit at the moment, I'm not running as well as I did pre-lockdown, actually, but I'll address that. But the mental bit of it is just priceless for me, and you just see more and more. There was a good friend of mine that started running about 12 months ago. He did his first marathon in October. Not Greggy. Richie, my friend Richie, and he's now committed to it because he feels that benefit. It's nice to actually see other people experience that for the first time. So, big advocate of it, love it. Group running, individual running, tunes on, tunes off. Joining a club, one of the best things I did just at one point as well. So I'd definitely recommend that. But every run's different, beautiful.
And more so from a mental point of view than a physical point of view, you find the benefit. Why do you think that might be, or what specifically? Is it almost the mental challenge of almost having like longer, faster distances to run and aim for, or is it just when you're out running you just feel like this physical weight off your shoulders? Is it more that combination of both?
I think it's probably more of the latter. Definitely. My mental health experiences, I remember it was just over 3 years ago we moved house, and you know what it's like, you've just had to unpack so many boxes that are in your old house before you got the new house, and you end up wasting days because you find stuff you're interested in, you start reading stuff that you've found and not seen for a year. And just randomly out of nowhere, I was in this box and I was going through things, and this Doctor's line came out, and it was like, this is like 2000, mid 2000s, 2005 or something. It just said, Brian Welsh, depression, 2 weeks. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, really?
I totally forgotten it existed. I'd almost forgotten it happened. But I remember that was at a time when I was feeling really, really down. And at that point, that was basically what you got, was the doctor would say, 2 weeks off work, antidepressants, good luck, come back and see us. And at that point, I think I took the antidepressants for 2 days, and I remember one time I was talking gobbledygook, and I was like, thankfully I got good advice, and they said, look, that might not be the best thing for you right now. And from that moment on, I've kind of always tried to think quite carefully about mental health and how you treat it. And the best treatment is, I mean, it's such a complex issue and it's so individual, so this is not advice for everyone, it's not going to sort it, but for me, getting outside, getting exercise, getting fresh air and talking to people, it's a pretty, you know, if you've got those foundations in place, you're going to get through some of those tough moments. So I just remember when I picked up that bit of paper, I thought, wow. And you know, that just shows that, I think now the good thing now is everyone's acknowledging this world, and everyone treats mental health almost as much as their physical health. Everyone's got it. You're on a bit of a scale of how healthy it is and not at any one time, and the fact that we're talking about it like here, and we talk about it more today than we did 20 years ago, is brilliant.
So that's interesting. 2005, you went to the doctor. I mean, that's well ahead of the spike in mental health conversation.
Yeah.
Do you even remember that? Like going to the GP and they were like, depression.
Well,
how did you like feel about that? And did it feel like you were almost isolated? Did you feel like a bit strange? Like how?
At that point in my life, I wasn't in a good place. And to get to the point where you have to go and have that cut. Easier to send a text to someone these days and say, like, I'm not feeling too good at the moment. It's still hard, but to actually physically go to the doctor and do that at that time was a big step and showed kind of where I was. I've actually forgotten the question, but
And that's interesting, because I didn't know that, but I've always felt that you've been like almost uncharacteristically open about having these sorts of discussions, which generationally, I should say, and almost gender related as well. Like typically, you know, I suppose like males in their 40s, 50s, you know, that's typically not something that they always chat about. It's more of like a grin and bear it. Yeah. Type thing.
Yeah.
Was that the kind of, how do you think you kind of felt comfortable opening up and having these sort of discussions? Was it kind of, that was the pinnacle? It's almost like it was so bad that you didn't really have much of a choice but to be comfortable chatting about it.
I mean, there's probably other things going on in my life at that point that were difficult, that were feeding into the fact I wasn't in the best place up there. I mean, I think you can go even further back to, you know, teens and all the challenges of growing up and not ever, maybe not feeling 100% comfortable about things at that point. So it was always in the back of my mind that I maybe felt a bit different or might need a bit of help. And then things came to head at that point. And I think from that point onwards, nothing was solved overnight, but one or two things were put in place by me or for me that I've probably not really deserted since. And sometimes you can forget to look after yourself, even though if you know what the answers are. I mean, it's all the time people will do that. I know it's good to go out running, but I might go 2 weeks without running, and you're like, right, wait a minute, what? You can't be complaining about feeling down if you're not doing anything about it. So, again, you're talking 20 years ago and even further than that to the start of a kind of mental health journey. But I think it's easy to talk about it today for two reasons. As that's happened a while ago, and I've got loads of reference points for what I've done about it. But secondly, because it's so prevalent at the moment, and the west of Scotland's terrible for that demographic as well, males, 30s, 40s, even younger. You see it so often now, people reaching out on public social media forums. You can see, I mean, people will either say, I'm having a shit day, I'm in a bad place, or you can just read between the lines of their messages, and you just, having the knowledge and the experience of having gone through that, you can identify with what they're going through and just try and then help them. I do it all the time. There's supporters of this club that I know struggle, and it's important that you're kind of there for them the way people were for you. So, God, this is getting deep after, deep in 18.
It is a vicious circle, I think. the point around, for example, taking running, right? Again, as like one antidote or whatever you want to call it, way to offset mental health struggles. When you neglect it for a couple of weeks, your motivation to actually do it also depletes.
Yeah, yeah.
And because your motivation depletes, obviously you're less likely to do it. And then it's just
perpetuating.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's still to this day something you need to kind of consciously is it now? Do you feel like you've broadly know what those pillars are, whatever you want to call it? It's almost like non-negotiables that you need to do, otherwise you just kind of suffer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I exercise regularly, diet well, drink less alcohol, have good contact with good friends and family, and have a pretty stable work and home life, then things are going to probably be pretty good. Challenges will come, but you'll be ready to deal with them. If one or two of those don't get looked after, then they can creep into the others and affect the others. So the diet's definitely getting a pretty strict post 45 review from me, because I want to get back to running the way I was before COVID. And if I'm eating better and running better, I'll feel better. So that's, we always reflect at this time of year, don't we, and make big aspirations, but genuinely, I'm seeing Greggy and Strava and it's really annoying me. I'm chasing them. I'm hunting them down. So I'm also going for runs.
How do you... Because I feel that... I know that you kind of go on and off the bandwagon with running a little bit, but generally speaking, over the course of the last four, five, 6 years, very consistent. How do you... what sort of things do you put on? How do you motivate yourself to go for a run when it's the very last thing that you want to do? Especially... this time of year, where it's like wet and windy and dark and cold, how do you do it? Because it's always way more easier to not.
Yeah. How would I do it? I mean, if the knowledge of the benefit is going to drag me out, then that's a great place to start. If not, I've also going back to joining a running group. I actually read this from Ailish McColgan. She said, what piece of advice would you give any kind of aspiring runners to join a group? And I did that. I actually did that during COVID. And once the rules relaxed, I was going Tuesday speed session on road, Thursday night trail, just more relaxed, beautiful out in Helensburgh, obviously. And
yes.
With those two in place, I could top it up during the week. And joining the group is another thing that will drag me out on a rainy night. And the third thing, which I did for the first time this year, which helped me to get almost ready for Dublin Marathon before I got an injury, was just got a coach. Yeah. And he structured my training plan, and it was so good. I was absolutely flying. Because he wouldn't ever put in the next run until he'd seen the last run. Then he'd read how I was doing, and he'd build in the next thing. And he was setting... It was like quite challenging, the fast session, so that was like really motivating. A guy saying to you, right, can you handle this? And you're like, bring it on.
Yeah.
So
whereas if it's just you,
anyone can get an online coach, but if you can get one that's local to you that maybe you can run with once a week. So I would run with him every Monday night in a group session, and I'm going to get back to that in January, and I'm going to make things easier for myself this year or next year, because training for a marathon, while work's busy, it can be quite heavy. It can become, you know, Sunday you're talking about going out 3-4 hours, so first quarter of next year, I'll be trying to get a 5K PB and just do the short stuff and get moving quick again. And then we'll see how it goes from there.
See how it goes. It's actually a really interesting point, back to the group run. And again, appreciate we're speaking specifically about running, but the principle, I think, is applicable to wide areas of life. But because then it almost becomes less about the run and more about the other things around, like, the social interaction, obviously being surrounded by people, building those relationships. You said running around the trails in Helensburgh, which we've obviously done. It's such a stunning part of the world. And before you know it, you're actually ticking off loads of those big pillars to make you feel better. And also you feel more accountable to other people.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like, right, I'm going to go for a run today and no one else knows about it. But if you've agreed with, like, your mates or whatever it is that you're all going to meet up,
Definitely. As recently as Saturday morning, I did a run by the riverside in Glasgow. We passed Frame with my friend Richie and Alex, who was over from Dublin the first time. We've actually got a running chat group, the three of us, and we've had it going for about a year because we were all training for the one marathon, but we never ran together because I ended up not doing the marathon. So Saturday was the first time we did it. But we spent 50 minutes running, and we talked about family, talked to at work, talked about Scotland football team, we talked about Germany next summer, we talked about fun stuff, serious stuff. It was like, it is like a wee therapy session, isn't it? Really, you can, and no one's really afraid to get things off their chest these days.
So. It's such an interesting thing. I really find that I much prefer running with other people than running by myself.
Yeah.
And I feel that it's almost like because you're doing a healthy activity, it almost encourages like that sort of healthy conversation.
Yeah. And there's a sweet spot in the middle as well. If you can run with someone and you just run with them, you don't even need to chat.
Yeah.
Because that's quite a nice run.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So running and chat, run, let's say you're doing 9:30 slow pace and you just have a right good blather for an hour like we did on Saturday morning. Or you run on your own, but there is that other option that you mean you could go for a run. You say, look, I feel not great.
Yeah.
You want to go run?
I don't need any of your chat. Next hour.
Yeah.
Oh, just fucking keep it shut. Yeah.
If you're going to keep it shut, we'll run for two. So that's a nice thing. I've got a few friends who are in that. Like, you'll not be, it's not like Mr. Bean and you don't see in for an hour, but you'll talk, but you'll just be allowed to get your head into the run and just lose yourself.
Yeah.
There's a first song reference.
Yeah. And then, so who was it, who told you about the group running or advocated for the group running?
Oh, it was do you know, I said...
Yes, Scottish Commonwealth athlete.
I'm at middle distance.
For Britain as well.
For Scotland and the union we're part of, so... No, see, when I actually had time in my hands at the start of the whole freelance,
I was going to say,
I started my Helensburgh Runner Insta account. There's a wee plug.
Good plug.
And I had time in my hands, so I did Q&A with you and Lindsay Conn, and I reached out to her by email just thinking, ugh, that will never come in. And then she replied saying, love, no problem. And then she did the wee Q&A. So that's
amazing.
And when she tells you that something might be a good idea, you're like, right, I should probably listen. So.
Are we going to pick that up in the new year? Helensburgh Runner kind of...
I'd love to. I could, if any of the runners... You've interviewed a few runners, haven't you? So we could give each other a wee follow and slide about and get some questions shared. Yeah. So then we can do the Q&A.
Love that.
That's good. We're actually laughing. I feel like the first 25 was quite serious there, but it's all good.
To go back to... less laughter. Dublin Marathon.
Yeah.
Again, I know we've chatted a lot about running, but just general life principles in terms of dealing with the adversity and the resilience you needed and the setbacks, etc. I feel like that Dublin Marathon is a great example of that because, fuck me, you put in a massive effort to train towards it and I was at, was it two, literally two, 3 weeks out?
It was probably about 4 weeks out I picked up the injury, maybe even five, and I tried to run through it. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to not do my midweek runs but keep my big long runs, and then I went out big long runs and they weren't happening, and I felt so I was pretty devastated. I just had to get over it, and then it was good that my two friends were running it, because flights were booked, and I thought, just focus on that. One of your pals is doing it for the first time, first ever marathon, go out there, support them, and you know, just make the best of it. So, but it was definitely tough.
Was it as simple as that, or was it like a pretty lengthy period of like almost grieving? It wasn't just like, oh, my mates are doing it, it's fine.
No,
it was. Yeah,
there was actually between me deciding not to do it. There was 2 weeks before I actually told them because I was
really
so,
just.
I was
distraught.
Plus, I felt guilt that I wouldn't be running with them, and it wasn't going to be quite the weekend it was going to be. Worst things happen in life, don't they? So you've got to get over it. But it was definitely because I was going really well. I trained really hard. I stuck to a plan. I had something that was working for me, and I was actually looking at a pretty healthy, taking a right good chunk off the PB.
Yeah.
Instead, I ran about 200 meters. I went to see them at the 13-mile mark, and I just ran with them in my denims for 200 yards. See you guys, and then went back to see them at the finish.
Yeah.
But anyway. We go again.
And do you think, are you doing it next year?
Yeah, because...
Year, because let's be honest, I'm not going to post this for a few days.
When you get home. Because it's become so popular in Dublin, they give the runners of any year first sign up for next year, or they'll lose their place.
Yeah.
So we just automatically signed up. So we'll so next year it'll be... short stuff first half of year, and then we'll get ready for the Dublin and give it another good bash.
You fine?
Oh dear.
Oh, good, good.
Hi, Greggy.
Do you find that a lot of the attributes that you need to be a good runner, you use in other areas of your life, such as doing your own business? So like turning up when you can't be asked to, the discipline that you need, almost the unglamorous nature of it. The funny thing is with like starting your own business and running and a lot of things like this is that, and to bring it back to the social media point, is it can look very good on social media, especially a running, which is so easily measurable. You know exactly how far you've been, how quickly you've done it.
Yep.
And it's very easy to like embellish on social media, I suppose. Well, 2 points. Do you find that a lot of the attributes that you use for running, you can apply to your business? And then going back from the business point, what would you say, because again, like, you know, I know you've got obviously a suite of clients, but Partick Thistle, especially because we're here. What would you say are some of the things that maybe the social media world wouldn't know about the day-to-day? Because there's always like a price that you need to pay for these kind of like dream jobs, I suppose.
Two great questions. So applying running fundamentals to working, I think it's like, for me, perseverance is a big bit of running, isn't it? Mm. You've got to persevere. That's that answer. That's great.
Yeah.
What else? Perseverance.
Have you always had that? Or have you had to build it?
I think there's parts of my like, characteristics I've had that have been running's brought out the best of them. So yeah. Stamina's always been pretty good. Always been one.
Effective.
Perseveres. And yeah. In terms of what was the second part again?
Almost the side to the, let's call it this dream job of working for Boyhood Football Club. That is amazing, full stop, right? And it looks especially amazing on like your LinkedIn, your social media, everything. What are some of the, like the downsides of that that maybe isn't publicised, not by you, obviously specifically, but by people, let's say, that maybe people wouldn't know?
Yeah.
You know.
I think probably just the number one for me is the hours of work.
Yeah.
To an extent, if you work in an agency or for a company and you're overworking, it should get addressed. There might be peaks, but you should be able to address that and not have to do it. Whereas if you're on your own and you need to do it, you've just got to go on with it. So I probably work too many days and too many hours. Again, that's something I'm always trying to manage. Stress levels at times. I think specifically working for the football club that you support is obviously a blessing, but there is a danger you can care about it too much at times. And you're always thinking about it. The client is the football club, but really the client is kind of the fan base. It's all about the supporters, and I've got personal relationships with like hundreds of them. I know so many Thistle fans, and the WhatsApp messages you can get in any given week about any given subject, it's, you can become quite all consuming. So that's got a danger of taking you over. So
that's a very interesting point, because I actually imagine that there's probably like a healthy sweet spot in any job, not just doing your own thing, but on one side you have one side of scale, you have literally not giving a fuck at all, which obviously isn't ideal, because you'll turn up and just do a terrible job. It's my approach now, I'm joking. But then on the other side you have like super passionate.
Yeah.
However, there's probably point of like diminishing returns where, to your point, you care too much and it can actually be at the detriment to your work, and you can take everything personally. Whereas it was almost like this like healthy degree of distance, I suppose. Is that like an ongoing battle?
There's probably not much you can do to avoid that unless you want to start caring less about your football club, and that's not happening.
So
likes of, in the middle of 2023, we went on this incredible playoff journey and won 5 games in a row and 3/4 of playing some of the best football I've ever seen, led by the club's 4th top scorer of all time as manager. It was the dream scenario, and then in the last 15 minutes of the second leg of the playoff final,
it
went down the tubes, it went to penalties, and there's a photo of me on the pitch seconds after full time, and you can tell the tears are there. And that's me as a fan at that moment, and I'm heartbroken. And Less than 24 hours later, I'm walking in that door to work at the football club. The first person I see is our star winger, who I know that when I look at him, he's leaving the club because we're not going up. I walk up the stairs, I see the manager, who's just crestfallen. And I mean, that's the most extreme example of how, you know, it was bad enough having to handle it as a fan, but coming in the next day and having to work again, and you know, what's the first statement we put out after we've kind of not managed to
achieve? And how can you separate the emotion from that? Exactly. And just,
So that's really difficult, but I wouldn't swap it for anything, because I'm when it goes like it did for those first five games, or even when it goes regardless of the result, you know, for example, on Saturday there, I'm hosting in hospitality in front of 200 fans. I'm on the mic for 5 hours, and when they walk out at 6 o'clock, they're coming up shaking my hand, saying they've had the time of their lives. You know, you can't put a price on it. You're smiling as I say this to you, so we need to get you in there and experience it, because it is absolutely awesome. So it's, what is the trade-off? The trade-off is that sometimes I'm going to feel really, really rubbish during my work because I care so much. The positive is that the good days will be good, but the great days will be like absolute magic. So, and you know, I still sit and watch the game as a fan, and I feel the same way. And whoever's wearing red and yellow, they're still my heroes.
Yeah,
I get to work with them during the week, and you know, the captain today did me a favour, phoned my dad just to check how he was doing and stuff. Can't do enough for the family, and so it's brilliant. And I'm really grateful you're wearing a yellow and black watch and a red top. It's not gone unnoticed. And by the way, if anyone wants to join this amazing football club, Partick Thistle Football Club, we are fan-owned, and you can join the Jags Foundation for as little as £1 a month and be part owner of a football club.
Oh, really?
So there you go.
Very class.
We'll get the form over to you.
Yeah. We'll put it. We'll link it in the show notes.
That'd be lovely.
That's what professional podcasters do. Yeah. Do you run a Partick Thistle podcast? Have they got anything like that?
Well, not at the moment. But I actually talked. We've got the goalkeeping group. Obviously, goalkeepers are a different breed, and
we went strange.
Shout out to Kenny, Jamie, David, and Mason. But we went round to a local charity cafe recently. They did some volunteering, and while I was sitting with them, just waiting for the volunteer to start, there was about 4 or 5 really weird subjects they were talking about, and I just thought you guys would be amazing on a podcast because you're just talking about really niche, funny things. So,
how weird are we talking?
So, not
for my listeners.
I'm trying to think of a good example. Probably not. No, there was one story in particular that I'll tell you later. Sí, señor. But during lockdown, in fact, I did interviews with former Thistle players just by Zoom and recorded them. We put out one a week. The series was called In Lockdown with X player, Y player, and it was a wee bit wonky because you're doing it from home via Zoom and it's not perfect, but it gave me some good practice. And there is one really good Thistle podcast out there called Draw, Lose or Draw, which is a fans one, but I think one within the club talking at more length with some of the personalities around the club might be a goer, so I'll maybe ask you for some tips in the show notes.
Probably the wrong man to come to for podcast tips.
Not at all, you're doing great, mate. Doing great.
So, as we currently approach 2024, but when this gets posted, we'll probably be about halfway through 2024.
This episode was never released. Howie and Brian were found in prison.
What are we saying for 2024? What have we got goal-wise, professionally, personally? There's a small little football tournament coming up in June.
2024 is dead exciting. So, fitness-wise, just running. Here's what ideal looks like in 2024, right? Quarter one.
Are you going to put some numbers on it? Are we talking about?
I'm going to put not quarter one, 5K sub 20. My best ever is 19:17. I'd need to be going something like that, but sub 20, 5K.
And if I'm drop that in,
quarter two, sub 40, 10K.
Oh,
quarter three. I think the Glasgow Half Marathon just falls within that sub 90 minute, and then quarter four would be a Dublin Marathon and just any kind of PB. But that's ambitious. But if I get flying and if I can lose a wee bit of timber, then it's all doable.
Yeah,
and then you'll feel brilliant about anything.
A few more beers and those will be like a sub 30, 10K.
Yeah,
sub hour and half. Come
Steeple
on,
three
legged race.
Professionally, I think it's just more of the same. It's probably just trying to get a little bit more structure. And what was the thing I was thinking of? The podcast is actually a good show because it's been in my mind, but time is the enemy. What else would I like to do work-wise? I'll come back to that. But yeah, summer, next summer is the dream. Huge. It really is the dream. So
when this is huge.
This is for a, as you know, as well as being a Thistle fan, big Scotland fan, myself and my son Matthew go to all the home games. We're members
shout
of
out
the,
to Matty Boy.
Yeah, supporters club, shout out to Matty and Emily. And
shout out to Emily. You're going to do a little Taylor M-Bem. Rendition.
M-Bem. Oh man, that playlist. I've listened to it a couple of runs, by the way.
Genuinely amazing. Oh, listen to it on a run.
Do you know what? I didn't get one for my birthday.
I think we need to give a bit of context. This was just genuinely brought a bit of a tear to my eye. Mm-hmm. Shall I tell the story?
Yeah, on you go.
So my Spotify Wrapped in 2023, so about 6 months ago, what was it? So top was, I mean, I can't remember the exact order, but it was something like Taylor Swift, Oasis, James Blunt, Robbie Williams was top, of course, and Simply Red snuck in there. And what Emily, your daughter, did was made me a playlist on my birthday, which is the exact same date as Taylor Swift. Songs of those artists that spelt out "Happy Birthday, Howie."
I know.
In order. Amazing creative.
That's beautiful.
Beautiful. Yeah. And absolute tunes as well.
I know.
We're not talking, like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, it was banger.
H was
banger.
Like, Hello by Oasis. A, you know what I mean? Like,
Angels.
Oh, it was big. W, Wonderwall. Like, it was huge.
It was really sweet of her. And when she made it up in the car and we were driving home from somewhere and we listened to it all the way through and we're singing away. And then obviously we sent it to you and you loved it. So. Yeah, shout out to M-Bem and back to Matthew and next summer.
Is he coming out with you?
Well, here's the rub. So, Germany hosting the Euros in 2024. Scotland qualified, beautiful. The last big when I was 18, 19, Scotland qualified for France 98.
98.
And that was a golden opportunity to throw it to a big tournament and watch Scotland. And for whatever reason, we didn't go. We watched all the games at home and it was still class. Scotland, Brazil the game.
Norway.
And Morocco.
Out in John Collins penalty.
John Collins penalty. So Scotland played Brazil in the opening game. Brazil were the champions from 1994. You can't get a bigger game, really, than that. The opening game of the World Cup didn't go. It was still amazing. Watched it in Park Bar in Glasgow. It was carnage. But always regretted it and thought...
I still remember that.
Yeah.
And the reason I remember that is, A, it was the first football tournament that I ever got into, because that was kind of around when I was getting into football. Just missed by 2 years, Euro 96, which is devastating. However, remember, in my shoot annual 98, the rig on John Collins, he took his top off after he scored that penalty.
Fucking hell. Fit boy. Yeah.
It's still my screensaver. Fitzbo, John Collins,
what
shout
lad,
out.
What a lad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the whole not going to that, I always look back and think, I just wish I'd done that, because it turns out Scotland weren't very good for quite a long time. Your expectations of major tournaments so different to ours. Getting there for us is almost like winning it. We obviously now want to go on and do well, and we've got a chance with this team. But anyway, the moment we qualified, we knew it was Germany. This is the dream. You cannot pick a better country to host.
What's the England? What's the Scotland Germany football relationship?
Strong,
like,
healthy, just very healthy.
Yeah, a mutual.
There's actually
hate for...
There's Paul Lambert playing for Dortmund, winning the European Cup. Things like that. Alan McAnally at Bayern Munich. Yeah. There's been loads over there. In fact, FC Cologne, they have got a German language rendition of Bonnie Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond that they sing before every game. So there's loads of Scottish
amazing
things in German football culture.
And who was the boy who played for Rangers? George Albert, was he German?
Oh, the Hammer. Yeah,
he was left peg.
Yeah, what a left peg.
A left peg.
Aye, the ginger German, incredible. Anyway, we're going to finally tell a story about next summer before anyone nods off. So me and my pals, and obviously Matthew as well, we've all got our eye on it and thinking this could be the dream trip. We qualify, happy days. The draw's not till December. What do we do? Because there's about eight different host cities, and even if you're in one group, you're playing at three different cities. And one of the boys, Richie, again, his partner's German, and through that, he came up with an idea to stay in this place called Koblenz, which is just south of Cologne.
Yeah.
beautiful German city, but just a wee bit off the beaten track. And we booked it on booking.com, free cancellation, pre-draw. Amazing. And then the draw comes up. Scotland v Germany, opening game. Right, so you attack Munich, you get that over with, and then you go down to Koblenz. Game two is in Cologne, just north of Koblenz. So you're basically in Koblenz for 10 days as a camp. And then game three is in Stuttgart, so go over to Stuttgart, finish the job, qualify for the round of 16, no game for a week, up the road, save up for obviously going back out ideally, but the complication was always that Matthew's birthday was June the 15th, tournament started June the 14th, so whenever Germany-Scotland came out, I was there's going to be an implication here, because either it's going to be on his birthday, or there might, it turns out Matthew said, I'd rather be at home for my birthday and with my family, so I've got tickets for the game, I'll go out, see the game, I'll come back on his birthday, and then I'll go back out, meet the boys in Koblenz, and then Matthew's got a ticket for the last game. So because we're in the supporters club, we get access to tickets, so I've got all three, all the boys have got all three, Matthew's got a Hungary game. It's just honestly the dream, and we're so buzzing. And then it turns out we've got some good players at the moment, including Super John McGinn, who I can't stop scoring as he did last night, even though your boys turned it around beautifully, which will be completely irrelevant by the time this is out. We've got about four managers on by then.
Ten Hag will be gone.
12 Hag.
Talking of birthdays in the Euros, so it's Amy's birthday on the 20th of June, and England are playing that day, so it's much easier to tell her via a podcast that she'll be getting binned off than it is to be. I'm only joking.
You're going to the game,
I'm
darling.
Yeah. What are we thinking about Scotland's chances next summer? Okay, two things. Two things. What do you think is par? What does success look like?
Oh, man. I think maybe the same answer there, but par for that team, you've got to get out of the group. You've just got to get out.
Is this the best Scotland team since the?
It's a good question. That probably.
How long are we talking?
I would say since that the 96, 98, when you've got the likes of John Collins, Gary McAllister,
Stephen Hendry, Jim Leighton.
Colin Hendry. If Stephen Hendry was in the squad, we might actually have won. I think it is the best team since then, because you've got your man Mick Sauce, Helensburgh's finest.
Scott McTominay. He'll be listening.
She will be listening. Andy Robertson, John McGinn. You've got proper, Premier League performers there, not just players. And we probably just need we still need someone up top that is an international quality striker, but Big Linden will do for me. So I think we've got a chance. We're in a group.
Who knows? Should qualify? Everyone qualifies anyway?
So basically 24 teams, six group of four, and then it's round of 16. So only eight teams get knocked out. So you're doing well to get knocked out. If you finish third, four of the best third place teams go through. So you could win one game and get through. I think this is a golden chance, because I think we were a wee bit spooked at the last Euros when it was empty stadiums and the Czechs beat us in the first game, scoring from like the halfway line. It was a nonsense. But I think that experience will help them going into this one. Shoot, I mean, half of Scotland will be there. Yeah. So if you want to go on holiday in Scotland, do it in June next year or this year, sorry, because nobody will be there. You get the run of the place. Golden chance, and we cannot wait to go. Went to my first two trips, actually, Dublin to see Scotland, and we got hammered two summers ago, but we went over to Georgia in the autumn there.
You lost against Ireland?
What's that?
You lost against Ireland?
Yeah, it was one of these Nations League. It was out in June, and we were just... We were so bad, but we beat them at home. But I went on the trip to Georgia, which was my first proper kind of trip.
Yeah, so this is huge.
Yeah.
So Georgia, I think you'll be able to explain this better than me, but the way the Scotland Supporters Club point system works in terms of getting in the mix for tickets is you get allocated a certain number of points based on the game you go to. Yeah. So, for example, like England or Spain at home, you get pretty much naffle because everyone wants to go to that.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously the away games like Georgia or Iceland or whatever it might be, you get more points to incentivise people to go.
Yeah.
Boys trip to Georgia.
I know. So I was sitting on 11 points, which was just under the guaranteed threshold. So when the Georgia trip came up, I thought, I'll have a bit of that and it'd be quite a nice place to go. About 7-hour direct flight.
To Georgia?
Well, we had to, that included refueling. for in Istanbul or somewhere, I can't remember where we were, probably Prague. It's a long flight, so we sat in a plane for a long time, but once you got there, what a beautiful place. And just a good experience to be away on a kind of international away day. Happy days. So
here we go, some predictions here.
Yeah?
Yeah. A few. Firstly, Luxembourg, are they qualifying? Are they not? Did you know they're in the playoffs?
They're in the playoffs, I know. Incredible.
Unbelievable.
Imagine that.
Oh,
Luxembourg.
The mighty Luxembourg.
You'd have to go, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It's about I need to check this and edit it, but about a 2.5 hour drive from Koblenz.
Is it?
Yep.
Your Koblenz knowledge is strong.
Yeah.
Any complaints, listeners out there? Otherwise, you might be nodding off.
Just George Abbott, the ginger German.
Those games will be in March, will they? Those
I think so,
semi-finals,
yeah.
And final. Who have they got? Can you remember?
Do they have Georgia?
They might.
I think they might even have Georgia.
Georgia basically get two home draws. I think one of them, Luxembourg's the semi.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they could do it.
Could do it.
By the way, your boy from Napoli, he picked up a booking in the last game and he's suspended.
Yeah, gutted.
I know, because he's incredible. He scored two in the game we were at. So good. Oh, that would be incredible. England and Luxembourg at the Euros. That birthday just get even better.
What are we saying? In or out, Luxembourg?
All in. Absolutely.
Where? How far is Scotland going? Prediction number two.
Oh, I think we can get out of the group, and then if we get a decent draw, why not quarterfinals? Why not do, you know, a Wales could come back to bite me, but the total belief.
England?
Oh, good question, mate.
I can see winners in your eyes.
No, look, for the sake of you and my dad, have they been lucky with the draws at recent tournaments? Probably, but at the end of the day, they've got some serious talent middle to front, and with Bellingham, I mean, who's better in the world at the moment?
McTominay, that's about it.
Probably the only one, yeah. So, England, really, unless they get to the semis, is probably not a good tournament, isn't it? Losing in the semis isn't great,
but that's where you should be.
So, you could win it. Any team of that calibre can win it. It's just international tournaments come down to a bit of luck. And
last two.
Yeah.
Top goal scorer, and who's going to win it? We'll revisit this in 3 days' time when the tournament's over.
I should know who top goal scorer has been out then. It's got to be, having seen what he did in the World Cup final, even though he lost, Benzema.
Messi.
Benzema's ridiculous.
Benzema?
Aye.
Mbappe,
that's the one. I'm looking at his face in my head, Benzema is going to make some comeback here. Mbappe, seeing what he did in the World Cup final, it's got to be him. That's a really weak answer.
Yeah.
If McTominay scores, he could go on a run. Let's say McTominay, outside bet.
An overall winner?
Scotland, mate!
Come on!
Led by Benzema.
On that, from Benzema, Scottish centre-back legend Stephen Hendry.
Yes, it's one each.
Yeah. Brian Welsh, thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Absolute pleasure, my man.
Loved it. Let's go and hit the ivy.
Let's do it. Thank you all for listening, and a very happy New Year or...
Easter.
Easter, probably, by the time it's out. Cheers, guys. Thank you very much.